Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Retirement Wisdom Podcast, focusing on the changing nature of retirement today and the non-financial aspects of a successful retirement transition. Join host Joe Casey and learn from leading experts in the field and the stories of people who created interesting second acts as they share practical ideas and tips to create your own. Check out our website at retirementwisdom.com, where you can download our newsletter and other resources to learn more about how coaching can help you. The best way to support this podcast is to head over to Apple Podcasts and post a rating and a comment. It's easy and it's free. Join our conversations and get wiser about your retirement.
Our topic today is one that presents unlimited opportunities, but many challenges, and that's the topic of networking. Our guest today is Kelly Hoey. Kelly is obsessed with changing the way we understand and approach networking. She's the author of Build Your Dream Network, Forging Powerful Connections in a Hyper-Connected World, a modern practical guide to the necessary and frequently dreaded task of networking. Kelly's worked with top companies, brands, and conferences. She's appeared on CNBC's Power Pitch, co-created and moderated the Meet the Innovators speaker series at Apple, and contributed to publications such as the New York Times, Forbes.com, Fast Company, and Inc. Her insights have been featured in Real Simple, Working Mother, Good Morning America, and other publications such as the Wall Street Journal and the FT. A former attorney and active participant in the New York startup community, Kelly has been lauded by Forbes as one of five women changing the world of venture capital and entrepreneurship, also by Fast Company as one of the 25 smartest women on Twitter, by Business Insider as one of the 100 most influential tech women on Twitter, and by Inc. as one of the 10 most well-connected people in New York City's startup scene. Finally, EBW 2020 included her on their list of the 100 most influential global leaders empowering women worldwide. So Kelly, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Joe. Good to be here.
So our guests have just heard your bio, but I know we'd all love to hear more about your story. How did you go from your legal career in Toronto to what you're doing today? And along the way, how did economic downturns create opportunity for you?
God, as soon as you say economic downturns, I realized from every sort of milestone, high school graduation and university graduation, law school graduation, entering the legal profession, let me think, making a career change after 9/11, leaping out of a job just after Lehman Brothers. I think everything in my career has had some sort of economic calamity tied to it. I don't know if that's a good thing. But my career story, and you know, really is one of, and where my career got kind of evolved and got interesting, other than the lockstep world of being a lawyer, really started happening when I tapped into networks. And that opened up new opportunities. So when I think about it, sometimes you got to keep your head down and do good work. But if you don't make your good work visible, and if you don't make the skills and talents you have visible to other people and a variety of different people, you'll leave your career vulnerable, both in times of economic downturn, but just in general. And you won't, it'll be vulnerable because you won't be aware of the other possibilities for your talents when you're kind of head down doing good work and have very narrow vision of what is out there or who you're surrounding yourself with who will tell you what talents or abilities you have.
So how should we be thinking differently about networking than perhaps we do?
Well, I think right now, I think people think there's no networking because we're stuck on computer screens or safely 6 feet or more distant from other people. But in general, I think what people need to think about networking is you need to ditch the schmooze you need to ditch the notion it is only an activity you pick up when you need something like a job lead or a career lead. And you need to think about it more in the sense of, how do I interact with people every day? And well before the events of 2020, things we were doing every day were texting and tweeting and maybe posting on Facebook. Maybe we're sending a birthday note or an anniversary wish. All that is part of your networking arsenal. If you're someone who has been or had been in the workforce a long time, when I think about your networking, that's how you showed up every day for your colleagues and coworkers. Were you a good mentor? Were you someone who was a good project manager? Were you like all of those activities to me are part of our kind of networking reputation and network building that we have done throughout our lives. So for listeners who may be thinking about a change, you know, some evolution in their career, this is where I'd say sit back and think about how you've been showing up for your network every single day.
That makes sense. And here's a word for you, reciprocity. I know it's a key concept in networking. I always hear about it or read about it, but it always kind of feels transactional to me. And what I noticed about your book, Build Your Dream Network, it's really about cultivating relationships. And in your book, one of the words that leapt off the pages for me was generosity. How is that different than reciprocity, and why is it so important?
Well, I think there's this underlying notion with networking of kind of the give before you get. And I think there is this notion that people hold on with sort of an outdated version of networking of the reciprocity. And the reciprocity that I, like you, feel is transactional in the sense of, oh, Joe has made an introduction for me, I must make an introduction for him. And that's sort of a very linear way of thinking, rather than thinking about networking in a much more kind of bigger picture than a one-off situation. And so generosity for me is how we reciprocate. It is how we show other people we are grateful for what they've done for us. It is how we can extend thanks. It's how we can create a stronger relationship. So take the example of someone making an introduction for you. Your networking exchange, if we put it that way, your generosity is not simply to thank the person for the introduction, because that's just human decency. It's letting them know what happened with the introduction. It's letting them know what happened following up that introduction. Maybe you asked for an introduction because it was for a job lead. Did you schedule the meeting? Did you have an interview? Did it lead to another interview? Did it lead to a job offer? Your networking generosity is keeping the person who made, like the initial spark, the person who made that initial introduction, your networking generosity is keeping them on that journey, because people want to help other people, but they want to know that their help is useful. They don't want to be left in the dark guessing. So yeah, that reciprocity to me, let's switch it out with generosity and switch it out with, all right, if I was to give someone a hand, how would I feel if I didn't find out if my advice was implemented or the interview happened or didn't happen or they got the job or they didn't get the job? I'd kind of like to know. So your generosity is to behave that way with other people.
That's a great point about the big picture, really zooming out a little bit and thinking about it that way. But I also noticed in your book that you get very specific too. And in particular, you talk about specific goals. And how can setting specific goals make all the difference in networking?
Well, for me, the goal setting is, it helps me give a focus and an understanding on why I'm choosing to undertake a certain networking action. I mean, cast your mind back, it probably doesn't take that hard. I know we're casting back over a year since we all were in in-person events, but cast your mind back to that point in time and think about occasions where you attended something or you signed up for a group or an organization or a club. And you walked in and you thought, why on earth am I here? That's why I say have a goal, have an understanding of why an activity is something that you want to do, where it fits in with your overall career or retirement or business or new venture plans. Is it something where you're tending to learn? Is it something where you're tending to discover information? Are you trying to expand your network? You know, are you supporting a friend who's getting an award? Like, have an understanding. Because when you understand, you can focus, you can be intentional, you can be present, you can be part of what is going on. I think you bring a much more authentic awareness when you have an understanding. So that's why, for me, having sort of grounding our activities in the universe of what our goals and desires and outcomes are, why it's really important, as opposed to just going out. When people say to you, just get out there and network, like, that for me just feels so like just energy, you know, being exerted for no purpose, rather than saying, what is it that I'm trying to achieve? And who are the right people, in the sense of where are the right groups of people or types of people I should be interacting with so that I can achieve what I want to achieve?
One of the things I loved about your book also was the case studies. And there's a lot of great ones there. And they offer a valuable window, I thought, into what different network approaches look like from the receiver's point of view. I tend to think about us as the actor, as the agent in the scene, but how does it look when they're coming at you? What do's and don'ts do you see when people are approaching you from a receiver's point of view with networking?
Well, I mean, let me give you an example from the book on this in terms of kind of that glorious networking serendipity. And from you who have read the book, you'll remember the case study of Joe Styler and how he networked up the corporate ladder at GoDaddy. And Joe's case study came in after I submitted my book proposal, and I needed to add in Joe's case study. And it came about because I had been put in touch with Joe I was looking to buy a URL in the aftermarket. I called, was put in touch with Joe to say, hey, I need to buy this URL. And Joe's first question to me when we were sort of after the, hey, so glad so-and-so put you in touch with me. His question to me when I said I was looking to buy a particular URL, he didn't say to me, well, what do you want to pay for it? He said to me, what's it for? So when I think in terms of things to do, listen, be curious. Make time to lean into a conversation, because at the end of what could have been just a purely retail-like sales transaction, instead, I've had the great pleasure of learning about Joe's career. I have this wonderful new person in my network who's, I want to say, career adventures and evolution is something I keep my eye on, because just such an intuitive networker and network builder and someone so invested in his professional development. So when I think of sort of the do's and don'ts, it's like, dude, listen, it's such an integral part of our networking. And don't rush sometimes just to get the thing done, because Joe would have gotten a sale of a URL in any instance, but instead he got so much more because he was curious and asked a question.
And as I recall from the case study, he's done very well subsequently.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he's a great example too of someone in terms of focusing on what he can control in a career change, being he can control how he shows up to work every day, he can control how he treats his colleagues, how he manages the people on his team. He can control his own professional development and investment in the skills and the information that he needs. And that's a really valuable lesson for all of us when we can go through a career transition and just want to rail against the walls of everything else that's outside of our control.
The other case study that got my attention was Allison Levine. I had the chance to see her present back in my corporate life. We had her in as a speaker for a leadership event. And wow, amazing.
Oh, yeah. And Allison and I originally met when I was the president of 85 Broads And Allison, it was during her second trip up Everest, best way to put it, her second climb, and the one that she did reach the peak. And Allison and my relationship was purely, I want to say, over email, couple of phone calls, and a lot of social media until her book came out and she was doing a book signing in New York. And I went and she was madly signing books and I stood next to her and I said, could you sign it to Kelly Hoey? And she just stopped and she screamed. And it was the first time we met in person. And that's, you know, maybe why in some of this stuff with this digital world we're in right now, one of the things I've always done is really thought that these digital tools are part of the way, they're part of the human dynamic as opposed to a marketing or sales or some other venue, some other behavior or attribute we have to bring. If we bring who we are, regardless of the venue, for lack of a better word, we can build really strong relationships. They don't have to start across the table with a cup of coffee and what people sort of typically think of is if we don't start the relationship physically in the same space, it's never going to be meaningful. And I have so many examples in my own life of relationships that may have started online that have turned into friendships and mentorships. If I hadn't brought who I am offline to those online venues, I don't know if it would have happened.
So Kelly, I know from reading your book and researching you that you're a card-carrying ambivert.
Yes, I am.
Mix of introvert and extrovert. But many of us introvert types are allergic to networking. But what advantages do you think introverts bring to networking that they may not really always realize?
Well, you're allergic. The introverts are allergic to the old schmoozing, transactional networking as I am as an ambivert. So the first thing I'd say to introverts is please ditch the old definition of networking. Just trash it, get rid of it. It doesn't serve any of us well. And don't assume that someone who is outgoing, someone who loves to socialize, the life of the party, don't assume that that makes a good networker. For me, the power and the strength of introverts, particularly in a hyper-connected 24/7 world where we are tethered not just to our mobile phones, but to so many devices, is people, what's really a strength is people who are intentional and focused, considerate and deliberate in their outreach, in the way they choose to make human connections. And to me, those are attributes of introverts. You mentioned and we talked about Joe. He is an introvert and he is one of the best network builders I've ever seen. So many people in the case studies, as you mentioned, Build Your Dream Network is filled with case studies. So many of the people I chose to interview on the basis of the strength of their networking. And these are not people who were born with platinum networks. They built really powerful careers and on the basis of being very powerful network builders. Most of the people I interviewed were introverts, and I didn't discover this until they gave me the answers to the question, and they'd slip in there somewhere. Oh, well, this is unusual because, or I'm an introvert and I don't enjoy, and I'm like, hold on a minute here. I think I've interviewed a bunch of introverts. So in this day and age, I think the extroverts can learn from the introverts and the introverts can toss aside any advice that someone tells you that you need to network like an extrovert.
So you mentioned this day and age, and I'm curious, how do you think of the different social media platforms that you use?
Well, we sort of touched on it before when I talk about, I think of them as venues, but, you know, sort of context matters. So not all social networking sites are the same, just like the way we share information where we're in person, how you say something around a boardroom table versus the kitchen table, or could be the same news, but we say it differently based on the venue and the context. So I think of LinkedIn like The Office. the things I would talk about when I was at, as a lawyer in a law firm or an ABA conference, is not stuff that I would talk about if I was on Facebook or Instagram. I might talk about it a little bit differently on Facebook or Instagram, but some things I talk about on Instagram, I wouldn't talk about on LinkedIn because I'm not in the food business, so you don't need to know what I ate for lunch, and I don't sell shoes, so you don't need to see those either. So, but hey, that's fair game for me on Instagram, where it's, you know, a little bit more of that kind of personal and casual networking environment. And then, as I always say, and Twitter's my been my favorite for years, you know, Twitter's like the cocktail party. How are you the good guest? How are you the guest that other people want to invite in or want to see again at conversations? And on all of these sites, this is sort of the power of hashtags, is where you can find community. You can find community around topical interests or pastimes, and you can find the people that you would be interested in chatting with and learning from.
So, Kelly, what have you learned about networking during this pandemic, coming up on a year, that will be helpful to you in the post-pandemic world?
Well, I'm going to say, on the joking, cynical author need to sell book side of things, I've learned that so many people still don't get it right. So, you know, my book was, I'm going to say, relevant before the pandemic, still relevant now, and be relevant after the pandemic. So that's kind of good news in terms of things that I've learned. And there is something kind of gratifying, and intuitively the ways you've been looking at things in the world and understand that that's ringing true. I think one of the most helpful things for everyone to think about as we move forward is not just the networking activities, which I think you'll agree with me, when we hear networking or network, we really do zero in on the activity. And I want listeners to take a kind of a step away from that one and think about the network as in the structure, diversity, composition of the people that you turn to, not the activity, but the actual people. Because what's really showing true is the differences in network structure. And by this, I mean there are stereotypes that I talk about in the book, the wide versus narrow networks. And typically men have had sort of a broad, shallow network, one that its strength has been that it is a very diverse across sector and industry, maybe title, that kind of thing. But it doesn't have a depth of relationship, you know, much more on an acquaintance, a lighter kind of knowledge of somebody else. Women's networks have been more narrow and deep in the sense of it might not be as big, but there's a greater depth in terms of the investment of time that women have spent getting to know people. And what you've seen over the course of the pandemic is that the women's networks, the narrow, deep one, has been what we've really needed in terms of people to turn to help us with the stress and the strain and to shoulder our worries. And where we've actually seen decreases in networks has been in those sort of shallower, the relationships with less depth. And so a lot of men have experienced network shrinkage because those more casual relationships, we haven't had the environment to reinforce those. So it kind of behooves all of us going forward to really think about that dynamic and how and where you're finding ways to nurture and grow both of those types of network, because you need both of those to have a strong, I want to say, lose the word again, strong network. You need both of those types of dynamics to have the right sort of composition and network of people around your career, your ambitions, your career transitions, and your dreams.
It's a great way to think of it. And what I'm taking away from this conversation is you're really talking about a mindset that you're bringing to the whole topic of networking and building those relationships. It's not just about the tactics.
Yeah. I mean, so many people just want, well, just give me the answer. Like, what's the one, you know, networking, you laugh there, because I laugh on it too. It's like, people need to see the kind of the contradiction. We celebrate ourselves as being unique and one of a kind Yet we want a formula for a human activity that is one size fits all. There's an absolute contradiction there. If there was a 10 things you need to do to network better that was like a checklist item, I mean, I'd hand it out to people and I'd find something else to do. We could get off this topic. The fact of the matter is networking is a human activity. And if you've learned nothing else in the past year, we are squirrely, weird, and difficult. What we
all of the above.
Yeah, all of the above. And then the next hour will be all of that above again. So we're weird, and you've got to keep that in mind. We're difficult. What we want today is not what we want tomorrow. We change our tune all the time, and you've got to honor and respect that. So the only hack with networking, the only thing you can do to make it easier for yourself is realize I'm dealing with human beings, and this is never going to be easy.
So proving the point that we're difficult, at least, if not many other things like weird and squirrely, I'm going to divert back to a question that I'll ask you where, Kelly, could you just give me the answer? You'd written a lot about and talked to, I heard talk about LinkedIn invitations and some of the ways not to do it and some of the ways to do it. And I know some people who will be listening to this will be very interested in that topic. What's your thoughts on how to approach the office of LinkedIn in terms of invitations?
Always customize it. Always. I'm adamant on that. Do not send a standard, I'd like to connect with you on LinkedIn. Just don't do that. No, never. I delete all of those every time because I'm like, why? Or I think, okay, do I now have to go and look at your profile and search around and think why we should connect? No, there's not enough hours in the day for me to do that kind of stuff. And I'm like, no. And you don't have to write a long request to connect. Just tell the person how you met or, you know, hey, love the podcast episode that you were on or, you know, whatever it may be. Or, hey, do you remember you and I used to work at whatever? Always personalize it. Always, always, always.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it brings up one of the principles that I saw in your book, which is make it easy for the other person. Don't expect them. Don't delegate the work over to them. It's just not going to be effective.
Yeah, I think maybe sometimes people don't do the work because there is this vulnerability. There is a feeling of being exposed when we are networking from a place of need. And so I think maybe people sort of hesitate as a way of kind of shielding themselves from that rejection. But maybe it's from living in New York all these years. It's like just make it easy for someone, put it out there, say what it is that you're looking for. You know, to quote Wayne Gretzky, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, but take well-calculated, well-prepared for shots.
Well said. Thank you. And one last question, if I could. A number of our listeners are interested in making some type of career shift. Often it's more to more meaningful work, or they're interested in creating what I'll call a second act career. What steps would you recommend them engaging in to approach their networks in the right way? And their networks might be broader than they appear to be.
Yeah, because you're always looking to find intersections of interest. So what are the ways you can put that new interest or future interest, you know, kind of in the crosshairs of serendipity is what I like to think about it. So one of the best things I can say to your listeners to do is talk about what you're interested in doing or pursuing or switching to. Talk about it with anybody. We have a tendency to kind of silo our networks in terms of context. Like we know them from bowling, or we know them from the daycare, or we know them from the church group, or we don't think of those relationships as the sort of the fuller context of their relationships and networks and dynamic and what they have. So one of the things to steps is like start engaging all of your networks with what it is you want to do, because you never know where the opportunity or the chance or the introduction or the lead will come from. Now, one of my friends, he can direct linchpin to the introduction he was seeking was his personal trainer. If he chose only to have a dialogue with his personal trainer about his aching knees or sore back, when the personal trainer said, how are things going at work, instead of saying, oh, they're fine, and then launching into something about wanting to work off 5 pounds or whatever, instead saying, here's what's going on with work. And his personal trainer said, I think I know someone. And he did. He knew someone. So that would be, you know, like what steps to take. It's like, break down the silos. Like, don't assume your hairdresser isn't interested in what you're doing in work. Don't assume that you can't have a fuller conversation on your work and your ambition or your career change with someone at, you know, childcare. Like, they've got lives and interests too. And their life and interest and connections may be just what your dream needs.
And that really brings us full circle to what you talked about at the very beginning, about really making it part of what you do every day and how you're showing up to the people that you interact with.
Yeah, because you're doing it, so they might as well know. I mean, there's too many embarrassing situations where people have found what they were looking for and it was right under their nose. You know, it was the other mom in daycare who they didn't know beyond being the social secretary for their child. I always sort of say it that way, you know. And I remember saying to this person, well, who are the other moms in the daycare? No idea. I'm like, oh my God, ask them. They probably have lives and interests too. So sometimes what we need is so close, we can't see it.
Kelly, thank you so much for a great conversation. I know it's going to be very helpful in terms of your advice on taking a whole different mindset to networking.
I'm glad to share these ideas with you. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Thanks, Kelly. Really appreciate Kelly Hoey joining us today to share her wisdom on networking. It's an important topic, and it's one that's very timely because as we record this, we're in the pandemic, but beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel and thinking about the post-pandemic world and a lot of her tactics and strategies, but in particular, her mindset that she's recommending really are a great way to bridge that transition going forward. A couple of things struck me that she talked about. The first one was her case study of Joe. Great name, but he took the time to, in a transactional really conversation, what could have been, zoom out, step back, and ask the question, the why question, what's it for? And exhibited what she's recommending, taking the time to listen, be curious about the other person genuinely, and make time to lean in. When you're approaching networking conversations, don't rush. Give them the time and attention and focus they need, particularly the focus on the other person. Also liked how she recommends incorporating it into our everyday life. Don't really put up artificial walls. Ditch the old definition of networking. It's not about schmoozing, per se. It's really about building relationships, and it's about helping others. Love her concept of generosity as being one of the key words to emphasize as you in your own thinking about this. And then she also talked about really the depth and breadth of networks. You might start with one or the other. And in her book, she recommends doing a network audit. I know it's a very introverted thing for me to focus on, but maybe worth taking a look at your own network. Is it broad? Is it deep? Where does it need to be deeper? Where might it benefit you if it were a little broader? And then finally, her recommendation about find communities of interest. Where do people hang out that are interested in the same things that you do, that you are? And find ways to connect with them along those interests. Thank you for listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast. We usually share 3 to 4 episodes a month with the goal of helping people to retire smarter by focusing more on the non-financial aspects of life after full-time work ends. And that often involves, for some people, building a second act career or a new portfolio life. I coach in this space using a process called Design Your Life, which is created by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans at Stanford. I've had the privilege of being trained by them in the process. And although I work with one-on-one clients up until now exclusively, in 2021, I am creating a new group program with 6 to 10 people who might be interested in going through a version of the process together. It's a 6-week program, and you'll see details coming your way soon on that. Thanks again for listening to Retirement Wisdom Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on the Retirement Wisdom Podcast. You can listen to all episodes of our podcast by subscribing to them on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher, or on our website at retirementwisdom.com.